One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the show that explores the almost magical way music becomes entwined with our memories and life stories. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. Our guest this week is Robert Van Winkle. Robert is Community Outreach Ambassador for the Southwest Florida Symphony Orchestra, but still is often recognized as the former chief meteorologist for NBC2 in Fort Myers. After a 31-year career on television, Robert retired and moved to Arizona to take care of his mom when she was diagnosed with cancer. After returning to Southwest Florida, he worked a number of jobs, including real estate, substitute teaching, and he was even a naturalist on a whale-watching tour in Sitka, Alaska. Robert says classical music has always been a passion of his, and so helping spread the word about the finest professional orchestra in the area and the importance of classical music, especially to kids, has turned out to be the perfect post-TV weatherman job for him. He's also a U.S. Navy veteran and worked as a meteorologist on the aircraft carrier USS Nimitz. His bio ends by saying he's an avid gardener, enjoys a good bike ride or day at the beach, and that he can occasionally be heard playing taps on his trumpet for his neighbors at sunset. Hi there, Robert. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. So I want to know, before we get into the rest of the show, how long was it between when you first heard the song Ice Ice Baby and and when you learned that Vanilla Ice's real name was, in fact, your real name?
Robert Van Winkle.
How many years passed? Had to be at least a few.
It was a few, but I think early on in my television career, when my name was out there more often, that's when I think somebody finally pointed it out to me, and I thought, oh. So that would have been, what, 1986, 87, something like that.
Okay, so pretty soon then. The rest of us had to wait till like the E! Entertainment retrospective, because I don't think I knew his name was that for years.
Yeah, if you Google my name, his picture comes up and my picture comes up and it's like, who the hell is that?
Have you listened to any music so far today?
Yeah, actually on the way over.
What were you listening to?
Dvorak Symphony No. 9.
Is that what you mostly listen to? Is that, you know, because you're at the symphony, or you're at the symphony because that's what you listen to?
Well, today it was because I'm at the symphony, and in our next concert we're playing Dvorak, not the ninth, but we're playing the cello concerto. And anyway, I just was listening to a little bit of him. That's the New World Symphony is one of my favorites that he's done.
All right. Where'd you grow up, and how would you describe the musical background of your childhood? Sort of paint a picture of the music that was around you.
Oh, wow. Well, I was born in Ajo, Arizona. That's spelled A-J-O. And for your Latino and Latina listeners, of course, they all know that that is Spanish for garlic. So I like to tell people, I like to tell my Latino friends, yo nací en Ajo, which means I was born in garlic. And Ajo, Arizona is just a couple of maybe an hour or so away from the Mexican border in the middle of nowhere in southern Arizona. And my dad likes to say that he had three kids and each one of them cost him $75. That was the bill from the hospital when I was born. So musically, it goes back to, I guess, the first song that I sent you is musicals. I was in musical theater in junior high school.
Okay.
And we listened to around the house. It wasn't musicals that my dad and mom listened to. They were big fans of Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. My mom loved Frank Sinatra. And, you know, it was the typical music from the 60s and the late 50s.
You were right there near the border. Was there a Latino flavor to your musical tastes at all? Did that seep in?
No, not that I remember. Not that I remember. It was Dad was a basketball coach and Mom was a school teacher. And we had one of those big cabinet stereos, you know, the big wooden piece of furniture things with the record player in the middle. And they would put records on Saturday and Sunday morning. And I do have a memory of that from way back when.
Small town. Parent teachers. Did you then go to school where your parents were teachers?
Yes. That sucked. That I do remember very well. My mom always taught like two or three doors down from where I went to school. I remember once I called my teacher, one of my teachers, this couldn't have been more than second or third grade. I called her fat on the playground. One of my friends went running up to her and said, he called you a name. And she sat me down and she said, "What did you call me?" And I was just like, "Well, I didn't say anything." And then my mom walks by and she's like, "You have to tell her what you said." And it was just awful.
It was a mortifying moment.
Yeah. And so I've never called anybody that name ever again.
Probably a good way to learn that lesson and get that over with.
Do not do that. Well, little kids, you never know what they do. But yeah, so mom was always right next door.
Do you remember the first time you saw music performed live? Or at least the first thing you can remember.
Yeah. It was, well, the first thing that has a really big etch in my memory is the first concert that I went to, classical music. I went to one of those young person's concerts. It was probably fifth grade. And it was at Grady Gamage Auditorium at Arizona State University in Tempe. And by then we had moved to the valley, the Phoenix Valley. And so they bussed all these fifth graders in, 1,000 kids, you know, in the auditorium, loud as heck. But they played Tchaikovsky, and boy, I just remember seeing those violins and the timpani and the sound, and I just was – it blew me away, and I just remember that very clearly.
Did it make you want to do that?
Yeah.
Be a part of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I played the trumpet. I played the trumpet for a long time, junior high school, high school. And I also was in plays and shows early on. In junior high, I was the captain of the Pinafore. That was my first musical that I was in. And I can still sing the song in my mind. But I was never all that good. I mean, I was good because I sang first tenor, and that was always something that the choruses need. And if you're going to have a lead part and you sing tenor and you're halfway good, you're going to get the part.
Yeah, especially boys.
Especially boys.
Yeah, you know, the girls usually have some competition, but boy, especially in middle school, like if you're even close as a boy, then you're the star.
Exactly. The first musical that I saw was it's now come back to me, and that was The Sound of Music. We lived in Douglas, Arizona at the time, which is really right on the Mexican border. And the nearest big town is Tucson, which was almost an hour and a half away. Mom drove all three of us to Tucson to watch Sound of Music when it came out. That was late 60s, I guess it was. And I remember we spent, you know, 2 hours in the car to get there, and we missed the intro with the pictures. We were flying through the Alps and stuff. But we got our seats, saw it, and that was a big impression. And it was years later before I actually knew that they had that intro anyway. I
mean,
I'd never even seen it. I thought, oh, that's pretty. When did they add that?
Did you continue doing theater through college? I mean, through high school then?
High school and college.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I was Nanki Poo in the Mikado in college, my first year in college. So, again, singing tenor. It's a big advantage. If you sing tenor, you're going to get a part if you're willing to get on stage.
Did you ever do any non-musical plays?
Yes, there was a couple of local theater plays I did after many years back in Prescott. There was we would do a melodrama in the summertime around the 4th of July, Prescott Fine Arts, and I was one of the lead characters.
Mm. Yeah. Do you remember the first music you owned that you had physical possession of?
The first music that I owned that I had physical possession of that I really loved was a cassette tape of EL. Well, probably was the album first, but Electric Light Orchestra, ELO, Out of the Blue. That was one of my first. Now, that seems later on, but prior to that, I might have had some things kicking around, but that was one of my first, like, ownership ones. Like, wow. I got Out of the Blue.
I have an ELO belt buckle in my office.
Do you? Is it got the spaceship on it?
Yeah. It's a long story.
Oh, no. Oh, that's...
Listeners will put a picture of that on our social media.
they should, man. That's got a real... I don't know. It's a real kick to it. I love that music. Huh. It's got orchestra. You know, it's got violins. It's got the sound.
Yeah.
It's got rock and roll. You can hear the words. It's really... That was good stuff for me.
Let's get to your first song.
All right.
This is the My Fair Lady song.
Do you want me to set it up for you?
It's totally up to you. And by the way, what you sent me, you said, "I'm getting married in the morning," which is a line in the song. But the song is actually called "Get Me to the Church on Time."
Yeah.
So what's the story, or how would you like to go?
Well, let me just tell you a little bit about it, because you've been asking me these questions, and I keep saying about musicals and being on stage and stuff. So when I was back to that story of the record player with the big piece of furniture with the record player in it, I don't know when it was, probably 1970-ish, something like that, I got a cassette player. And so I would put the cassettes in my cassette player and then I'd stick it up next to the speaker of the record player and I'd make my cassette recordings.
A little bootleg.
A little high-tech bootleg. Yeah, exactly. And it was literally, you know, just make sure it was in the right spot and hit play record and then be really quiet so that you could get a recording. Well, I was making this recording of My Fair Lady, and it was that that album that had Julie Andrews and Rex Harrison. Yeah. So I was doing it, and I was halfway through the Get Me to the Church on Time, and my mother comes running in the living room with her hands above her head singing, "Oh, I'm getting married in the morning.
You're ruining my dub, Mom."
And I remember just getting all upset and going like this, "Get away, get away, get away." And I kept that recording, though, because you could kind of hear her in the background, and it became something that was really endearing to me after a while. It's long gone now, of course.
I can imagine. It would be nice to have that, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, but your whole idea of the podcast is to come up with songs that people can transport back to very clearly, and I will never forget the look on her face of just pure, let's just mess with Robert's recording and see, you know, how... It was just really joyful and fun.
Well, let's listen to this song, thinking of that. This is Robert Van Winkle's first song on Three Song Stories today. This is Get Me to the Church on Time. It's from the 1959 LP recording of My Fair Lady with Julie Andrews and Rex Harrison.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. If that isn't the quintessential musical theater showstopper, I don't know what is.
When was the last time you listened to that version of that song?
Oh, that's really special that you actually found that version. I haven't heard that in a long, long time.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. That was fun. I there's something about the silliness of it, the joy of it, the whole – I mean, it's just – it just makes me smile. It just makes me laugh. And I see those people on stage just having a ball and thinking, man, they get to do that every single night when they're on Broadway. And I don't know. That's just got a lot of joy for me.
You said that your mom knew what she was doing. You know, she wasn't just, was that her character? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or was that out of character?
It was kind of out of character.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little bit out of character. She was not, you know, none of, my sister and I are very musical, but my brother wasn't and mom really wasn't, but she was there at every performance I ever did. But that was when she burst in the room while that was playing. I think that was a little out of character for her.
Were you dubbing the whole album? Or was it just that song in particular?
Yeah, and then my cousin and I, my cousin David, he lives in San Francisco. He used to come visit me every summer. We'd trade off. He lived in Blythe, California, and I lived in Ajo, Arizona. So, you know, big time cities, right? So the excitement of the summer was I'd go visit him, he'd visit me. Anyway, we put this on and we would dance around in the room, like we'd choreograph this song for each other. My father was a basketball coach, and that was much to his chagrin. He was like, "What?"
Yeah, I was going
to
say, basketball coach in the around 1970.
He's like, "What is happening to my son?" Right?
Yeah.
I'm quite sure he was not thrilled to catch his son dancing to My Fair Lady in the living room at 9 years old.
Did you ever get to be in that show?
Can you turn this down?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
Did you ever get to be in that show?
No.
Mm-mm. No?
No.
Did you ever see it on stage?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it was here in Fort Myers several years ago. I got to see, I went then. Yeah. I'll usually, if there's a musical like that I know and love, I'll go see it no matter how many times.
So in high school then, you were one of the theater kids? Was that like your primary identity? You were a theater kid?
And choir and band.
And band. Yeah. Trumpet, choir, theater.
Trumpet, first tenor, and then, there's usually a part in the theater.
Got any memories from high school around music that don't involve those three things? Dances or, you know, get to see any concerts?
No, not in high school. Not in high school.
I was completely immersed in that.
Well, yeah, as far as like the extracurricular stuff goes. And plus, I had a bit of a disadvantage in high school because when I was a junior, my parents got divorced. So I had to move. My mom and I, my sister moved out of town. I mean, like, whatever. So my first day as a senior in high school was in a school that I'd never been to and didn't know anybody at. And the only door that opened up right away was, oh, I can sing. So, you know, the choir, I was in the choir by the first week, and I got a part in the musical that summer or that fall. And, you know, it's always been something that opened doors. But it was kind of weird not knowing anybody in your senior year of high school.
Yeah, and I have a daughter who's a senior, and she's done theater all the way through. And, you know, a new kid shows up, and there's sort of the in group, and then, the teacher kind of, knows who is capable of what. It's probably pretty hard to kind of come in as a senior in that world and try to nudge
Absolutely.
Your way in.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I had a girlfriend in the other place and all that stuff, and that was all over, done with, and just starting over as a senior was – I was tall and skinny and not, on the football team. So, all those things working against you. Somebody flattened my tires the first month I was there in the parking lot.
Somebody who hates choir.
Somebody who hates tall, skinny geeks that like musicals. Yeah. Whatevs.
So, where'd you go to college?
Well, I started at in Prescott, Arizona at the community college there. I lasted only a semester. I was kind of wayward. I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I grew up. So I joined the Navy. Plus, the divorce was, it was not all that great, and my dad and da-da-da-da-da. So I said, I'm going to go do something.
Okay, I was going to get to Navy. I wasn't sure the Navy came after college or in the midst of college. But
The story with college is I after high school, I only had one semester of college. Then I joined the Navy. Then I went back to college and then finally finished. So it had a couple of pieces. And I finally ended up graduating University of Arizona, Tucson, with a degree in German and a minor in business. So
I'll put that on hold for a second. So you were on the Nimitz.
Yes.
Storied ship, right?
Yeah.
But it was not long after it had been launched because I looked it up. It was launched in 72.
Yep. And I was on board by 77.
Wow. Yeah. And you did what there? You were a meteor. You did something with weather on the ship.
I was a meteorologist. Yep.
What does that mean?
Well, of course, Nimitz is one of the first nuclear aircraft carriers of its class. And by definition, it's got aircraft on board. We had 6 fighter wing squadrons and lots of other aircraft that were on. So whenever naval operations gets underway, you got to have a weather brief and you have to be able to tell the pilots what the weather is going to be like. So every U.S. Navy aircraft carrier has a weather office on it. And it's one of the only facilities that has a porthole as well, most except for where the bridge is. But in that tower in the middle, everything is all closed in except for the bridge and the weather office. There's 2 small portholes looking out.
So you can look outside and say, it's raining.
Exactly. And people find that amusing. But no, it was a naval regulation. All military facilities with weather offices have to have a window that looks outside so you can actually see what's going on out there. My first job in television, I was in a room like this as the weather office with no windows. And
yeah,
I was are you kidding me?
Got to walk outside.
I can't do this.
So you weren't doing – I was imagining – makes total sense that you're giving briefings to pilots and maybe the command crew or whatever. But I was imagining like there was a shipboard TV system where you were doing the weatherman thing for the crew. That's not what it was.
Yeah. No, it was.
Oh, it was that too?
It was that too. Back then, the weather office was responsible for briefing the pilots, of course. And to do that, we had to go down to the command center, which was called CIC, Command Information Center. And that was way down in the bowels of the ship. So I'd be up top working on the weather and do the forecast, get it ready on the papers and draw out all my charts. Then I'd go downstairs to the CIC and I'd wait for the pilots to come and then I would give them a brief. Every night when we were underway at 5 p.m., we had the Nimitz News, and I had to put on my, good uniform and go down to the studio, and we had a little TV set up with an anchor. We had an anchor, a sports guy, and a weather guy.
And that was just for the ship?
Yeah, closed-circuit TV
for all
the ship.
Which was how many, like thousands of people?
Full complement was 5,000.
5,000?
Yeah. But
that's a pretty big audience.
Yeah, I don't think we were ever at quite that many at one time. But I was on board when we launched the rescue mission to Tehran back in 1979.
Wow.
And the ship was full then. There was a lot of people on board, Marines and the whole bit. But anyway, the Nimitz News every night was on, and it was on Channel 5 because it was a five-star ship. And I would draw the weather map with my little big old marker. And,
wow.
And the boys around the ship would come up to me and they'd say, hey, give me the weather in Cincinnati. And I'm from Idaho Falls. Give me the weather there. And I'd have a little list and I'd give people the weather.
Huh. So you finished the Navy. You went back to college.
Yep.
But then you studied German and business,
mm-hmm.
which is a direct line to being a TV meteorologist, I think. Explain how that works.
Well, once I got out of the Navy, then when I went back to college, I just was going to do something else. And I've always been really pretty good at languages. And so I started taking German courses and I really enjoyed it. And then I took another year and went to Germany. I lived in Hamburg for a year and studied over there. It was kind of funny. I say studied. In Germany, they only give tests every couple of years. You go to college for like 2 or 3 years before you get one test. But then they're slammed in your face for 2 weeks and you really have to know your stuff. So I was only going to be there for a year. I was never going to have to take a test.
Hmm.
So I thought, this is a good setup. So I spent more time with my buddies in the bar and out having fun than I did in the classroom. But when I got back, they interviewed me at where I was at the University of Arizona, and they said, your German abilities are fantastic, you know. And so they gave me some credit, and that's what I got my degree in.
That's the way to do it.
That's the way to do it.
You got any musical memories associated with your time in Germany?
Boy, you know, 99 Luftballons.
Oh, is that when that came out?
99
Luftballons. Of course I remember that song. Yeah. That song was pervasive.
It was. It was. Do you remember who did it? Nina? It was Nina.
Something
like
that.
Yeah, that just popped in my head. So, yeah, some of the good German music. And plus, I went to Oktoberfest, and the real German Umpapa bands for Oktoberfest, there must have been 30 guys and girls up there playing their hearts out with tubas and brass, and that was pretty cool.
So how did you then end up, real quick before we do this, can you say three song stories, biography through music in German?
Drei Lieder Geschichte. What's the rest?
Biography through music.
Biografie durch Musik.
Thank you. So you get
that's
out of
probably not right.
We'll put it through translate. So how did you then wind up doing what you did for 30 plus years?
Okay, so yeah, I graduated eventually with this degree in German, and realized I interviewed with the CIA in San Francisco. They flew me out.
Because of your language skills?
Because of language skills. They flew me out, and I was in San Francisco on the day that the cable cars were put back into service after being out for many years, and Tony frickin' Bennett was in the front cable car, and I saw him go right by on that day. I have a little button right there that says, "Welcome back, cable cars."
Huh.
So it was really cool, and went through this interview process, and then the next phase was, we're going to fly you to D.C., and you're going to have to take a lie detector test, and you're going to have to do all this. And truly, there's a story, a series on now called The Recruit, mm-hmm. on Netflix, which is, I'm a fan. I love it. Anyway, it was really like that. I mean, it was like, wow, I just went, no. I don't think I want.
So you chose not to proceed.
They said, if you come to DC and we put you on the lie detector test and you tell any lie, you're gonna have to believe anyway. So I wasn't planning to lie about anything, but I thought, So point is, I went back to Prescott, where my mom had remarried, and my stepdad was a great guy, and I lived at home for a while, finally got an apartment, and just randomly, the Rotary Club president was a friend of my stepdad's, and he asked me to come to a meeting. They found out that I used to do the weather on board the Nimitz, and he happened to be the general manager of the TV station in Prescott, Arizona. He said, "We're looking for a weatherman," and I went out, auditioned, and got the job. And that was 1979, I guess.
Was that an NBC affiliate?
No, it was 1980, something like that. It was an independent station. Independent station. I used to have to do commercials too, but I'd have to intro my own weather forecast with the commercial sponsor. "Live from Newman Doors in Prescott Valley, this is your weather forecast." And I get on the air and say, "It's going to be sunny and nice today."
So how long were you there before you moved up to a bigger market?
About a year and a half, and I knew I wanted to do this. And so I started sending out resume tapes, which at that time was the way you did it, send out tapes. And I got one to Charlottesville, Virginia, NBC affiliate, market 186, you know, small market. But a friend of mine, Ken Croft, said Charlottesville is great. He was from Bedford. You'll love it. And I moved all the way across country, cold turkey, to Charlottesville, and Waterman Broadcasting owned the station at the time. So I was there for 17 years, I think.
Wow.
And got married, you know, did the whole thing, got divorced. And then Waterman said, we've got another station in Fort Myers, Florida. After my divorce, I was like, I got to get out of here again. So they brought me down here, and that's how I ended up here.
We'll get to more of your time here after your second song, but I just wanted to ask, so is a person who winds up as a meteorologist on a nuclear aircraft carrier trained to the same level that a person who goes through school to become a meteorologist? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I expected at some point in your arc there would have been, you know, some meteorology school, but I guess that's what the Navy gave you.
Yeah, I had quite a bit of training, naval training on it, but most of it was what you would probably call on the job training. So I worked with the senior meteorologist for 3 weeks on sending up SKU-T weather balloons, how to read them and how to interpret them, learning all the charts, 300, 400, 500, 600 millibars, 700, 800, whatever, and it was all OJT. So it was the same stuff that someone's going to get through a college education, but I got mine in like 3 to 4 weeks of 12 hours a day. This is hands-on how you do it versus the classroom training. And I say that because, you know, I was not really defensive about it, but people would say, well, you're not a real meteorologist. Well, I was a naval meteorologist with, you know, perfectly capable abilities to forecast the weather for pilots that are flying million-dollar aircraft across the flight deck of an aircraft carrier. So, but I didn't go to college for that.
Fair to say you're not sending up weather balloons anymore?
No, I did that for a while, though. Boy, that's challenging, too, because if you lose one of those things,
you've
lost.
Do you have to get it, or are you able to wirelessly transmit data back from it?
You have a box that's hanging off the bottom of it, and if you have to calibrate it, you have to get it tightened onto the balloon, lean about 6 feet off the back of the ship while you're going around in the ocean, and lean out there, let it go, hope it doesn't get blown back onto the tower, and then track it up as high as you can get it. We got one at up to about 45, 50,000 feet once, and we were having a party.
Sure, that wasn't a spy
great.
Balloon?
Yeah, right? we would do helium in the back, too. After the balloon was gone, we had helium tanks in the back of the ship for our weather balloons, and we would get back there and start talking like this.
Okay, let's do this.
Sorry.
That's great. No, let's do this Billy Joel song now.
Yeah, so in the Navy, I had, again, found myself in a position where I didn't know anybody when I went back there, kind of like my senior year in high school. You know, I move across country again. Here's a big old ship full of people. And I wanted to be buddies with, you know, whoever wanted to be buddies with me. And one fairly early on, a guy said, Billy Joel's going to be playing a concert. We were in Norfolk at the time. We weren't at sea. So when you're at port, you have time off, and a group of guys were going to go, and they said, Rip, do you want to go? And they called me Rip.
I went back and forth between a Rip Van Winkle joke and a Vanilla Ice joke from the beginning. So anyway.
Rip was my nickname. And so, yeah, and I was like, okay, yeah, gotta go. So we piled into this guy's Volkswagen camper, which I remember was just dirty, and, you know, I was like, wow.
It was authentic.
Authentic, right? It was probably 8 of us at least in the back of this thing. And we get there, and we're really early. We're in the parking lot, and we're listening to the radio or something like that. They weren't letting people in the concert yet. And out comes this joint, this big old doobie. And I'm like, oh, dear. You know,
here's. Is it your first time being in the presence of a doobie?
Yes. 20, 21, 22 years old, and I'd never smoked a joint in my life. I thought, oh, no, what am I going to do? You know, because I remember wanting to be accepted. So they passed it around, and I put it in there and didn't inhale. I put the whole Clinton thing, and then I moved along. I came back around, and I did inhale, and I thought, oh, wow, this is horrible. So a couple times, everybody was having fun, and we get in, and I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. No wonder I don't do drugs. This is ridiculous. nothing's happening. About halfway through the Billy Joel concert, though, the music started sounding really good. It was really, really fun.
The best music's ever sounded, man.
So good. And so this song, it scenes at an Italian restaurant. I call it the Brenda Arnetti song, but it reminded me of a musical. It reminded me of something like, you know, Get Me to the Church on Time. There's lyrics, there's a story, mm-hmm. and there's different paces of the music, and it's exciting and joyful, and yet pensive at the same time at the beginning and the end. And it's just one of my more favorite songs from Billy Joel, but it was at that concert where it really became something like, wow, this was fun.
Well, let's listen to it. And I have a live version and the album version. Which would you prefer?
Album.
All right. This is Scenes from an Italian Restaurant by Billy Joel from his 1977 album, The Stranger. It's song number 2 for Robert Van Winkle on this episode of Three Song Stories.
Meet you anytime you want in our Italian restaurant.
They don't play enough Billy Joel.
I tell you, that guy can write a song.
Yeah. I mean, the musicality of that is just – I haven't heard that in a while either. You know, you asked me that about the last song, and this – all of it is so cool to me. You know, and another one's really good. I was just thinking that, like, this – we like the storytelling of that Billy Joel piece and all that. Bohemian Rhapsody, mm-hmm. Queen, you know, that same kind of storytelling with all the musical instruments, everybody.
Mm-hmm. And it ups and downs.
Ups and downs and ins and outs and gets in your face and gets out of your face and makes you think. And yeah, that's what music's about to me. I love it.
You ever see him live since?
Nope.
Nope.
In fact, I think that's the last concert I ever went to.
Really?
I was not a concert guy. I went to see.
You mean like rock and roll concerts?
Well, yeah, rock and roll concerts. My sister sang at Grady Gamage, and she sang as backup for a concert. And I went Barry Manilow. His name went out of my head. Yeah, Barry Manilow. I saw him, but that was again.
She was a backup singer for Barry Manilow.
Yeah, yeah. He came to ASU, Arizona State University, and they went to the choir department and said, "We need."
Oh, she didn't tour with him, but she got to sing with him.
They needed, but what he did was when he went to cities, he would go to the musical departments of the universities where he toured, which was really kind of cool. And he'd get a backup group from that school and. The kids would sing with him. So my sister got to sing with him. So anyway, I was not much of a concert goer. But if Billy Joel – maybe there's – is there a good Billy Joel tribute band running around?
There's got to be.
It's got to be.
And yeah. I could see him doing something like a symphony crossover kind of thing.
Absolutely. You know? Same thing with Queen and
we should call him.
Let's do it. Hello, Billy.
Got this idea for
you. I smoked my
you.
First joint at your concert in 1977.
And now I'm with a symphony. Let's make this happen. So what year did you move to Fort Myers then?
I moved to Fort Myers in 2003, just 10 short months before Hurricane Charlie arrived. Yeah.
We'll get to Charlie in a second. What were your first impressions? How much bigger a market was this? This
is a good jump. I was in market 180-something in Charlottesville. This was market 62 or 3. Now I think it's up to about 59 or so. So a good medium-sized market. But again, the move wasn't based on that necessarily as it was just I was going through a divorce and I mm-hmm. wanted a change.
Had you spent much time in Florida prior to that?
Never been to Florida
wow.
in my life.
Okay.
Yeah. Not true. We went to Key West for a vacation once. And so I'd been here before, but never Fort Myers. And my first impression was, boy, is it hot down here.
Yeah.
Because I moved here in August.
Yeah.
And
hot and humid.
Hot and sticky.
You were chief meteorologist right off the bat?
Yep.
So, Charlie. You said 10 months prior to Charlie.
Yeah, more or less. I moved here in 2003. Charlie was in August of 2004.
That must have been sort of a sink or swim moment.
It sure was. I had the privilege of being on the air with Jim Reif.
I knew Jim.
Longtime forecaster here.
Good and, guy.
Yeah, he was one of the best. And when I was in the Navy, I learned from, you know, the senior chiefs and the chiefs that I worked for there. And then when I came down here, Jim, you know, shared his vast knowledge with me as well. So it's a profession that you really can get good at thanks to other people sharing with you as well.
What do you remember about Charlie?
What I remember about Charlie was everybody thinking that it was going to go to Tampa. And in fact, in the weather office, we were, you know, following it and thinking, okay, well, center of the storm looks like it's headed to Tampa, but hurricanes are more than that point on the map. And so Jim and I were trying to, you know, get the word out that, look, this could be a Category 4 storm by the time it gets off the coast. And, you know, this could be bad, even if it doesn't hit us. Well, as it turns out, of course, it veered off to the right and did hit us. But the big thing I remember was that it was the first time that this area had seen something that nasty since Donna.
Mm-hmm. And 1960.
So it was 44 years. That was a long time for people to go without any major hurricane strikes. And now here we are after Hurricane Ian, and it was even worse.
Yeah. So Ian followed a very similar path all the way through.
Did you know Ian? Yeah. Actually, the official landfall site apparently is Cayo Costa, which is exactly the same place where Charlie
Ian was
went
just
in.
Like you know. Yeah, exponentially bigger.
Big difference. Jim and I always used to talk about the checklist for the quintessential bad storm, and it was exactly what Hurricane Ian was. A large Category 4 storm, 30, 40 miles off the coast, big eye, slow speed, pronounced eye wall.
High tide.
All of this stuff, high tide, all of that stuff, check, 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 check. And we know what happened.
Real quick, I have a Hurricane Charlie story that you'll be somewhere involved with, sort of strangely. I was here. I was sent to the EOC, Lee County EOC. Uh-huh. It was a few hours before landfall. I was standing out front smoking a cigarette. I used to smoke cigarettes. Don't anymore, Mom, if you're listening.
Good for you.
And Dan Noah from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Mm-hmm.
He was their warning coordination meteorologist. He was there.
Yep.
He was standing a few feet away from me, and we kind of had gotten to know each other. And he was on the cell phone, and his face, I could just see his face kind of respond. And he hung up, and I said, "What?" And he said, "It has wobbled to the right." And he walked back in to go tell everybody. Mm-hmm. So I was like right there when the first word of that wobble happened. And I remember, like you said, I grew up here. We don't have hurricanes.
Right.
You know, so the first thing I did was call my mom and say, you know, you have to go inland.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
It was such an intense time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was unbelievably, it was a real touchstone. And now, of course, there are many people who will have Ian as the touchstone as well. And, you know, God help us. I hope it doesn't happen again. But this area has always been susceptible for this kind of storm. It's just a question of when. And now we know.
Yeah.
You know.
So, what was it like to experience Ian as a civilian, quote unquote?
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah.
it was terrifying. I was, you know, in my house by myself. Every time the roof creaked, I thought, there it goes. You know, I mean, it was 8 hours of hell, just like everybody else went through that stayed here. And the storm surge came right up to my front door. I live off McGregor. And thank God it didn't come in. But, you know, my front yard
was
covered.
You live on the riverside of McGregor?
Uh-huh.
But just far enough away from the river.
Yep, yep. I'm not in a technically flood zone. So many of us made the decision to stay. And I'm not going to judge anybody for saying stay or go. I mean, but I chose to stay, and it was terrifying, and I'm never going to ever do that again. That's for sure.
Can you reflect a little bit on the way technology, personal technology, has changed people's need for weathermen? If I can distill it down to that much, you know,
sure.
It used to be you turn on the news and that's where you got the weather, and now people can, you know, go as far as they want to go in terms of collecting weather data on their phone or their computer.
Yeah, it's definitely the way things have evolved now is that you can get the same kind of information that I was getting in the weather office on your phone or on your computer. The thing with a TV weatherman though is when you find somebody that you like, and what you're getting from them is their opinion, their feelings, their interpretation of that. You can interpret it as well by looking at your phone, but isn't it nice sometimes to hear another opinion or two? The whole forecasting business is about a community anyway. You get a bunch of forecasters together and they decide collectively what is going on. Same thing with Jim and Reef and I used to do with all the people we worked with. We'd all get together in the group and say, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And then you go on television and tell people what you think. You don't get that if you just look at Windy and see.
Understood.
What
and you don't also, you know, especially if you've been there a long time, you know, and people who are you know, constant viewers become, you guys are bonded. You
sure.
know what I mean? People will have a level of trust in you.
Yeah.
That must be a big responsibility too.
I think that's always going to be there. I do. I think there's always going to be somebody on television, well, I hope so anyway, that you feel connected to and trust. So,
Before we move on past meteorology into symphony, did you see the movie Weatherman, or whatever it was, the Will Ferrell movie? What was that like for people in the know?
It's just comedy, you know. It was just fun. Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is one that I actually kind of – the message of Groundhog Day is good, you know. Learn your lessons in life and you get out of Groundhog Day. So that I enjoyed. But, the other stuff is – it's kind of funny. There was one Steve Martin movie, wasn't there, where he was the weatherman in Los Angeles and he'd recorded on Friday and come back on Monday and sunny skies, da-da-da-da. And by Sunday, there was flooding and mudslides everywhere.
That's why we don't pre-record our newscasts here. You never know what's going to happen.
Never know.
So you left your job at NBC2 to take care of your mom, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I do not regret that decision one bit when my mom had cancer. And I had been doing TV weather for 31 years and thought, you know, this must be a good time to go. And So that's what I did.
Did you have some sort of like work withdrawal at first? You know, because that's got to be a grind. Daily TV. It must have been both a relief and a what am I going to do with myself?
Right. Well, the first thing I realized after I left television and went out west was that you should never try to second guess cancer. My mom only had 6 months, 7 months after I got there before she was gone. And I had ideas of us, you know, having a year or more, you know, time. So you can never be sure. So once that chapter was over, I found myself driving back across the country with all her stuff in the back of my car and back to Florida. And my job was gone, which is fine. I did resign. And I was like, well, what the heck am I going to do now? So, you know, I turned in 6 W-2s on my taxes 2 years ago because I was trying everything, throwing spaghetti against the wall. What am I going to do?
One of which was whale watching tours in Sitka, Alaska.
Yeah.
What's the story with that?
I took myself to the International Tour Management Institute, ITMI, in Sausalito, California, and I paid good money for a 3-week course in how to be a certified tour guide. And so I came out with the credentials and I got a job right away on Sanibel with Adventures in Paradise.
Oh.
And I was doing dolphin watch tours. And Captain Evan and I would take the boat out to Captiva and I'd put the tourists on the sand and I'd talk to them about the dolphins. And I loved it. It was great. Well, last year, around May or so, I saw this thing on the internet, a job thing about whale watching tours in Sitka, Alaska. Now, my grandmother lived in Sitka in the 60s. Mom and I went there because we wanted to see where grandma was back in the 90s on a cruise. I've always wanted to go back to Sitka. And whales and dolphins are the same cetacean species, so this wasn't much of a leap.
I'll take your word on it. No, I know.
Yeah. So I applied, and I'll be damned. Sure, come on up. So I lived in Sitka last summer for 4 months, and I absolutely loved it. It was awesome.
Now, Sitka is not where you think of when you think of Alaska. It's practically or actually closer to like Seattle than it is Anchorage, right?
Absolutely. That portion of Alaska there is called Southeast, and the people that live there say nothing more than Southeast. They don't say Southeast Alaska. They just say, I'm from Southeast, Southeast, Southeast. So that's that part of Alaska, basically the panhandle, not the Aleutian Island panhandle, but the islands down towards Seattle, and it's rainforest. It's tropical rainforest, millions of acres of tropical rainforest. By definition, it rains every day. Every day is cloudy, rainy, and cool. I was there for about 4 months. There were 7 sunny days when I was there. But you know what? You get used to it. And
I have, since the early days of my career in radio, have had my eye on KCAW, which is the public radio station in Sitka, Alaska, because I could see myself living in that kind of environment.
I know, you know what? I know right where it is too.
And so I've always thought at some point if I could be like a snowbird,
yeah.
I could be Sitka
oh,
and WGCU.
Let's do it.
If anybody of my managers are listening, this is not coming anytime soon.
No, that was totally my fantasy. I wanted to live there in the summer and do the whale watching tours and then come back here in the wintertime. I thought this would be great. The problem is there's no place to live in Sitka. It is expensive.
Really?
Very expensive.
Because it's a tourist town.
Well, no, because it's just a small landlocked community. There's so much rainforest,
there's no more place to build.
There's nowhere to go except for what's there. There's an airport, and the only way to get to Sitka is to fly in or take a boat. There's no road to Sitka, and there's only 15 miles of roads anyway there. It's about 8,000 people or so, and it's housing is extremely expensive, very limited. Food is outrageous, and like a bunch of broccoli this big, I remember was $9 at the grocery store.
Well, I'll bear that in mind.
Because it's you gotta have a little bit of lottery money stashed away if you want to just take off and only live there for a few months.
Yeah, if I could get a job there, they must have to pay their hosts enough to live there. I guess maybe who knows.
And I'm telling you, the sheer beauty of Alaska. That part of Alaska is gorgeous.
You wound up at the symphony.
Yeah. So
how'd that happen? I mean, explain that how that happened and sort of like what your role is there.
After Mom died, I came back, as I said, and I got a real estate license. I was a substitute teacher. I was working in real estate. I was a substitute teacher. I worked as a painter. I painted houses for a while. I was a shop clerk, a tour guide. I was trying all these things and all of them were great. I mean, nothing really sucked. It wasn't just sticking with me. And a couple of months ago, Amy Ginsberg, she's the executive director. She's actually done one of your podcasts. She called me up and she said, would you like to have coffee? And I thought, sure, no problem. And I'm thinking, oh, she wants money. she wants me to be on the board. She wants money.
She wants to put your name on a plaque somewhere.
I don't have any money anymore. So I was all prepared to say, oh, I'm so flattered, but, she said, we're thinking of expanding to have a position as a community outreach person. And basically, your job would be to get people to get excited about coming to a concert, represent us around the community. And I love classical music, as you know, and I like, the whole idea of performance and theater, and it just really
It must be
clicked.
Nice just to like go to work at Barbara B. Mann.
Well, plus, poor me. I get to go to every single concert, for free. And it's a dream job for me anyway.
Do you do outreach to like young people and things like that?
High
on your list.
Yeah, I got a presentation for fifth graders, fourth and fifth graders I've done in schools. A change in that presentation, I can talk to Rotary Clubs. I've done all three of four of the Rotary Clubs in the area. I'm going to see the folks at Seven Lakes HOA in another couple weeks, so I'll do HOAs.
Do you bring music? Do you bring musicians?
I bring snippets for the adults on my presentation of music. For the kids, I bring my trumpet. I play the trumpet. So I bring my
trumpet. Still play it well enough to play in front of kids.
The only thing I play is taps these days.
Okay.
Because I don't have to play valve movements. I stand in front of my house at night and I play taps for the neighbors.
Does that go over okay with everyone?
It does. Yeah, everybody's. In fact, sometimes people stand out and clap for me, which is hysterical. The night after Ian, we were all walking around like zombies and I played taps that night and there were quite a few people that came out and said thank you. But anyway. Yes, I bring instruments for the kids to touch and play and all that.
We've had Amy on the show. We've had the new
Radu.
We've had Radu, but we also had Nir on the show back, like 3 years ago. Nir Cabaretti.
Great.
Yeah. We love getting those kinds of people. So
I bet you their choice of songs is a little different than mine.
You never know. You never know. We've had all of them. Have you ever had a chance to trumpet with the symphony?
No. No, we are a professional symphony orchestra, which means that the musicians that play for us are paid professionals, and they're all wonderful musicians. So I am not of that ilk or caliber. What I would like to do, though, is talk Radu into playing for some concert season the overture to the Entführung from the Seraglio, which is the Mozart overture to that opera that he wrote, Entführung aus dem Seraglio. And there's a part in there where the percussion has a triangle, and all it does, the triangle just goes and goes and goes and goes. And goes. It just
triangle. You hardly can't do it wrong if you just keep it going.
You can't mess that up. So I'm thinking if I could talk him into doing that, then I could talk him into letting me play the triangle. That's my goal.
You could channel your inner Ed Grimley.
What?
Martin Short character, Saturday Night Live for the kids out there.
Right.
Okay, before we get to your third song, over your career, have you ever had a chance to meet any famous musicians? You know, have you been able to?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because just a couple of weeks ago, I had the extreme privilege of chauffeuring around Gil Shaham.
Oh.
And for those of you that don't know, Gil Shaham is a world-class violinist who was just here in Fort Myers for our first Masterworks concert. And I was really, you know, I did some research about him, and I was really very nervous. I thought, gosh, this guy's a big deal. It would have been like if a sports person was asked to take LeBron James from the airport to his hotel. You know, okay, I can do this, but you've got 20 minutes of him in your car sitting right there. What are you going to say? You know, so Gil Shaham, that kind of class. I'm at the airport. His flight was an hour late. So it was like midnight before he gets off the plane. And so I'm thinking, okay, you know, and I have my little sign. It's got his name on it. Sure enough, here he comes, and he's got his violin on his back. He plays a violin that was, it's a Stradivarius made in 1719. Mm. Millions.
You don't check that.
You don't check that. In fact, he doesn't even take it off his person. So, here he is, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, he just turned out to be so nice. He asked me, I'm sorry you had to wait, you know, and he was all this stuff. So it was really neat. I was starstruck, and the first true musical celebrity that I met in the classical music world was an absolute gentleman and a true mensch.
Cool.
It's very cool.
Okay, it's time for your third and final song.
I wonder, had you heard this before?
I still haven't heard it.
You haven't heard it.
Yeah. I collect the songs, but I don't listen to them because I want to be in the moment if I haven't heard it before.
Oh, I'm so excited. All right. So the Alan Parsons Project, probably pretty obscure. This album that he wrote, did it in just a few days, like in the matter of a week or so. It was recorded in London, I believe. And the song that I picked here is very, very quiet and relaxing. And what I was attracted to was when I was in Virginia, and I was married at the time, my wife was on ski patrol. And so we had a resort called Wintergreen Resort outside of Charlottesville. And we would go up to the resort, and she would be working and doing her thing, but I would get to go and ride on the slopes, and I rode my snowboard. So I had a snowboard. I had one of those little matchbook iPod things.
Yeah,
remember
the very first
ones? Yeah. And I had this Alan Parsons Project album on there. And when you hear it, just try to maybe picture yourself gently going down a ski slope with that in your ear. You can't hear anything else but this music. And the song is called Time, and it's just it just brings me back to that peaceful, cold, beautiful surrounding of going down the mountain on your snowboard.
Going down a fairly simple slope, so you're not like frenetically bouncing from mogul to mogul.
This is not mogul. This is not mogul music. No. This is music where you get off at the top, and you maybe you've had a beer or something at the bottom, and you're just feeling good, and you're getting off, and you just sort of start your run, a nice leisurely run, and put this music in. And
all right, this is Time by the Alan Parsons Project from their 1980 album Turn of a Friendly Card. This is Robert Van Winkle's third and final song here on Three Song Stories. It's biography through music.
I was wondering if Jared liked that song.
Jared, what'd you think?
I didn't do it. What?
Did you?
I'm sorry.
I just was wondering if you liked that song. I know you've not, never heard it, right?
No, I haven't heard of Time.
What'd you think?
Nice, relaxing. It's. Yeah. Richard will disagree on this verbiage, but it's a vibe.
It's a vibe. Okay. That's an inside joke.
Okay.
I was vibing.
There you go.
What was going through your head while you were listening to it with us?
Oh, my total memory of the ski slope and the sunset, the feeling of the snow and the snowboard. It's cold, and the fact that that's all I can hear is that – that music. I don't know. It's probably cheesy, but that was pure peace and tranquility to me. So
still snowboard?
Well, not lately, unfortunately, but
if somebody threw you on the side of a mountain with a snowboard, you can get down?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get out of my way.
Okay.
No, I got to tell you before.
No, go.
Speaking of snowboarding, one of the memories I have besides this music is it's a very young sport, obviously. I mean, Jared would be the guy that would be snowboarding, right? Not me. So when you're on the slopes, you're dressed up with the hat and the gloves and all that stuff, and you really can't tell how old someone is. And I remember going up a chairlift with two guys Jared's age, one on either side of me, and I took my hat off and I was, you know, cleaning my glasses or something. And one of the kids looks over and he goes, "Oh my God," he says, "you're pretty good for an old guy." And I was highly complimented and I wanted to just slap him as well.
Damn straight, young man.
Young man.
Okay, we're going to do a speed round, but I have one last question. You know, there are some theaters in town, some community theaters in town especially. Ever consider doing some theater at this stage in your life?
Sure, why not? No, I haven't thought about it, but
you ought to.
Yeah, no.
Why?
Well, no.
Theater Conspiracy at the Alliance for the Arts. You could go there and audition for their next show,
all
and
right.
You could
if
be right in there.
If they're going to do Man of La Mancha, that's one part I've always wanted to have. Yeah.
Okay. Speed round. Do you have a nickname that stuck over the course of your? Oh wait, did Rip stick?
Rip stuck all through the Navy. But after I got out of the Navy, then it was Robert. My mother would always call me Robbie. She's the only person that called me Robbie all through her life.
Hmm. Do you remember the last time you bought music that had physical form?
Yeah, just the other day, I bought a piece of music for my trumpet, just a couple of sheets. I wanted to try to learn something else.
So like sheet music.
Yeah.
Great
well,
answer. I was going for like CD, record, tangible, physical form, something you can hold.
Yeah. I bought a CD. At the thrift shop, it was a dollar. it was a Tchaikovsky CD, and it had the fourth on it, which is what we just played a couple weeks ago.
Do you do karaoke?
Never in public. In my car all the time.
Hmm.
I don't, because I my voice isn't as good as it was. And the last time I did karaoke, I couldn't find the pitch at the beginning. I mean, they played the song and the intro was there. And I knew this song backwards and forwards, and I couldn't tell you what it was right now because I can't remember the exact one. But what I do remember was I was in front of all these people and I couldn't find the pitch. And I literally was up there going,
"Did you give up?"
Oh, yes, I gave up, but they wouldn't let me leave, and they kept re-queuing it, restarting it.
At that point, you just got to go into like Bob Dylan mode or something.
It was excruciating, yeah.
If you were a championship wrestler, what song would you enter the arena to?
The one that Rocky did.
Dun, 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 okay. Dun, 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 what would your wrestler name be?
Will my wrestler name be? Well, that's no wonder you save these questions.
Chocolate ice.
You know that joke where you say, "What was the first street you ever lived on?" And your first dog's name, right? It would be Pepper Dover. That would be me.
Okay, that'll work. If you had to guess, what would you say is the song you've listened to the most times?
Wow. It would be something classical. It would be a classical piece, and it would probably be Beethoven's Ninth. Yeah.
Song you wish you could hear again for the very first time.
Oh. Whew. Ave Maria.
Hmm. Any songs you'll avoid listening to?
I hate to say it, but I can't stand it's not the genre that I can't stand. It's a song that just is loud without any point to me. Just there's just all kinds of words that, you know, one curse word after another. Songs like that. I can't think of anything that is that, but that type I just can't.
Any songs you'll avoid listening to because you don't want to be reminded of what they remind you of?
No. Sometimes I actually enjoy sitting there and crying if I hear the right song.
If you could broadcast a song into the head of every person on the planet in a collective moment, which song would you beam in there?
Oh, there's so many. How could people answer that? There's so many.
It's kind of a psychology test because it's like what kind of because you're gonna make the news with this.
Well, probably one of those Up With People songs, you know, something that's truly got a message and joyful about peace on earth and, you know, maybe a Christmas carol of some kind.
Up With People. They're the people who – yeah, I do.
Up with people. You meet them wherever you go. Up with people. They're the best kind of folks to know.
You could sing.
He's like, folks, you can't see this, but he's telling me stop with
his
eyes.
No, not. That was better than I could have done. What would your 14-year-old self think of who you are today and sort of what the arc you've been through?
Boy, I would hope that he would be happy. I feel just talking to you for this last hour that I have had so many pokers in the fire, you know, in my life. And I every once in a while I think, wow, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? I know I said that before already, but yet I am grown up and I guess I am, this is what I be, you know, and I hope that, I think I'd be pretty happy.
Would your 14-year-old self be like, you were a meteorologist for 30 years? Yeah. I mean, would that be like shocking, impressive, or like
it would
WTF?
It would be a shock because at 14, I thought for sure I was going to be in Up With People or on stage somewhere singing and dancing my little heart out. And, you know, I'd never planned on being a television meteorologist. No, that was never in the cards. So, yeah, that would have been a shock.
People still recognize you around town?
They do, and it
is
so...
Yeah, I got to thank people in Publix for giving you the side eye.
It is so flattering, and it makes me really... I mean, if anybody out there is listening that's said anything nice to me in the last couple of years, knowing I haven't been on television for so long, it's really appreciated. It's very, very nice. Sometimes people say, I watch you all the time, present tense, and I just smile and say, okay. Thank you.
All right. It's time for you to recommend your three people.
All right. So this might not come as a shock to you because two of them are people that I worked with at the TV station. But the first one is Haley Webb. Haley was the morning meteorologist and then the chief meteorologist for a while. She and I switched jobs, at least as far as the day part goes. I went to the mornings. She went to the evenings. So she became the chief. I became the senior chief. Anyway, she's out of the business as well. But she would be, I think, a really great interview. She's got a lot of heart. She's a wonderful woman.
Sounds perfect.
Haley Webb. The next one is Rob Duns. And I just talked to Rob Duns yesterday. Rob is currently the meteorologist in the daytime hours at NBC2. He is one of my favorite people. He is smart. He's funny. He is he's an all-around mensch, and he is sharp as hell when it comes to doing the weather and telling the story. And I'm sure he's got three really great songs.
Okay.
Help
make it happen.
Yeah.
We love it.
And then my last one is Keenan Riley, who I work with at the Symphony. Keenan is probably the same age as Jared back there. So he's got a whole different take on music. And sometimes when I'm in my office working on researching some of the classical music and stuff, he'll be over there next door and he'll go, hey, that sounds like this. And he'll pull up something on his phone, contemporary, and it has the same kind of pedanter that the other music, the classical music has. So I'm sure he's got a couple of really interesting insights about that kind of music that a younger person might like.
Sounds
today.
Great. Put this in their ears once it's out
and then
connect us with them and we'll make it happen. Any final thoughts? You've done it.
I know. Thank you very much for having me on. I was afraid that I was going to cry, but I didn't cry. So thanks for not making me do that.
That was all on you.
No, you guys are great. Very welcoming crew here at WGCU. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We make Three Song Stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, Florida. Richard Chinqui is co-creator and producer. Tara Callaghan is online content producer and host. Our production assistant is Jared the intern Gonzalez. Christophus is our executive producer. And our theme song was made by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. For this week's parting tune, we're transporting back 1 year to episode number 210, guest Jim Hale. Jim was in until just recently chair of the WGCU Public Media Advisory Board. He was a lawyer who once served as law clerk to Chief Justice Earl Warren at the Supreme Court in the mid-1960s and helped Justice Warren draft the Miranda opinion. He went on to spend 25 years with the Target Corporation as Executive Vice President, General Counsel, and Corporate Secretary. Jim's third song helped him tell the story of when his late wife Sharon was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 2017. He said she lived for 3.5 more years, way more than was predicted, and that this song struck a major chord with him toward the end of their life together.
She was one tough lady. She was determined to live life to the fullest. She flew to Minnesota when everybody, including the doctors, say you're not well enough to fly. In January of 2019, the oncologist said, Sharon, I think I've done about all I can for you. Why don't you look at hospice? And she booked a family trip to Tahiti instead. And during that period of time, I discovered a song by Jason Isbell called If We Were Vampires. Now, for a guy my generation, how I would ever run into that song, probably just listening to it on the air someplace, it really ought to be called If We Were Immortal. And the point of the song was a very poignant song saying, we have to realize we have a limited amount of time on earth together. And if you're a couple, in the song it says you may have 40 years together and then someday you'll be gone or sometime I'll be gone. You know, very sad song. But it struck me that that was true, that we were going to have a limited amount of time together and that I should be sure that every day was a day we spent together. And so that song had had a lot of meaning for me.
Keep listening.